Welcome to Perfect Dismay with Mariah and Kay. I'm Mariah.
And I'm Kay.
And this week we're doing paranormal. And woo! Kayla's going first.
I am, because mine's shorter this week.
Surprisingly. All right.
Yeah, right? I like my long-winded ones. All right, I'm going to do the Talman family haunted bunk beds.
Ooh.
Scary. Bunk beds. Okay, so this haunting was... For the Talman family, it was Debbie and Alan Talman, and they have three young children. And it was in the small farming town of Horicon, Wisconsin. Population under 4,000.
Horicon.
Yeah. I still don't know if I'm saying it right, but it's Horicon today.
I don't think we have any listeners there, so we'll be okay.
I'm going to ask my friend from Wisconsin to listen.
Wisconsin.
Critique me. All right, so May 1987 to January 1988 is when the hauntings occurred.
1988?
Yeah.
Oh.
87 to 88. But before that, the family had actually lived in the house for about a year prior to these hauntings happening. All right, February 1987, Debbie buys bunk beds at a secondhand shop. And the parents put them together, and then they put them in the basement until about May of 1987.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just assuming that their kids were too young to sleep in bunk beds at the time, and then they moved them up.
Yeah.
May of 1987, the parents moved the beds upstairs into the girls' room, and then the haunting started that night.
That night?
Yeah, that night.
Jeez!
There was no pause. Straight into it. Move the beds, you're haunted. Okay, so their young son actually slept one room over, and the parents had given him this old school radio with the manual turn, like, tuning knob. So that night that they moved the beds upstairs, the son had noticed that the radio was just tuning itself while he was in bed.
Nope.
Yep. Creepy. So he runs downstairs, he tells his parents, and they didn't believe him.
Yeah, first instance, I could see that.
Yeah, plus they're young, so like, imaginary friends and weird stuff happening. Yeah. So the parents didn't believe him, but they also threatened to take the radio away if he couldn't act right.
Aww.
Act right. All right, a few weeks later, Alan Talman was painting the walls of the basement, and then he took a break to go eat lunch. He put the paintbrush on the table, and then when he returned shortly after, the paintbrush was just in the paint bucket with the bristles up.
What? I don't think a normal person would do that, even if you're playing a prank, so...
I mean, if I was the son, I absolutely would, because you just told me I was a liar, and then I'm putting your paintbrush in the paint bucket. He didn't do it. The son didn't do it. So he just kind of brushed it off. He was like, oh, whatever. There's no ghosts. And then at some point, the youngest daughter, who's approximately 2 years old at the time, she said that she saw a, quote, red-eyed witch standing behind her door while she was in her bunk beds. And she also saw that the room was on fire.
Oh my God.
I feel like your 2-year-old's not making that up.
No, red-eyed witch is pretty specific.
Yeah, and if your room is on fire, like, either she's seeing the room on fire, the room's actually on fire, or she's got a weird imagination and you might want to help her.
Yeah.
But at some point later, the son also said he saw the same thing. Not the fire, but I'm pretty sure he just saw, like, a witch.
The same
standing
witch?
In his room, yeah.
I wonder if the daughter, like, told... them, like, the parents in front of the son, because if she didn't, right, and he didn't know about it, that's terrifying.
Well, there's no information on that, and nothing said that he saw the red eyes or anything, or the fire, but at this point, the parents decided to bring in their pastor, which is what makes me think that the son had no idea about it, and he just corroborated her story later.
And they were kind of like, oh, shit.
Yeah, like, maybe we should get somebody in on this. So they brought their family pastor in, who, as soon as he walked in the house, he was like, oh yeah, there's evil here.
Whoa.
But then this good pastor tells them the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Attend church regularly, and it'll go away.
Oh, fuck this guy.
Which they had already been attending church regularly, so why did it start, sir?
Yeah. Fuck you.
So, there's that. Throughout this time, doors would open and they would slam shut on their own, and then voices would just call out of nowhere. Order a pizza.
I'm so hungry right now.
Are you?
We're going to order pizza either. After this. Steven, start it.
You know that meme of the dog with the overbite?
Oh.
That's what I think of every time you say Steven. I just go to that meme.
Oh my god. I don't have an overbite. Well, actually I do, but not major.
I'll send you the meme because it just the first time I saw it, it said Steven at the top with a PH.
Stefan.
That's why I think of it. Okay. Back to the haunting. Stop giggling. This is not funny. Actually, so my power went out the other day.
Uh-huh.
Or yesterday, I think it was, because I walked back in. I had to take some package somewhere, and I walked back in to my kitchen light was on, which it's all set up on my smart lights, so it shouldn't be on.
You probably got hacked, homegirl.
No. It's because the power went off.
Oh.
So when the power went off, it kicked it back on. Usually it kicks on all the other lights, but it didn't. It was just the kitchen. And I knew the power went off because my clock on my stove was just blinking.
Ugh.
And I was like, okay, no problem. But then ever since then, my kitchen light has just been randomly turning on in the middle of the night.
Oh, no.
I'm just like, what are you doing? So I have to scream at my little Dot to turn the lights on so she can turn the lights off again. And I'm like, what is this?
Aren't you scared?
Ghosts. Did you have a bad dream that night after the sleep paralysis?
No. Oh, I meant to update us at the beginning. No, I did not have any bad dreams. I slept like a baby.
Good. Okay. 1 week prior to Christmas of 1987, the son saw something that scared him so badly, he told his mom he wanted to leave.
Aw, that's really sad.
Yeah. And then this, of course, frustrated the father, Alan, who then decided he was going to challenge the spirits.
Oh, fuck yeah, he bought this house. He was like, oh, hell like, no, we ain't leaving.
He was like, I'm fucking tired of this. I'm trying to paint my walls. Go away. He said that if the ghosts wanted to fight someone, they could fight him.
Oh.
And to leave his kids alone.
Oh, God. Perhaps. Oh, my
that's,
man.
That's some confidence.
Toxic masculinity, man.
3 weeks later, after a late night shift, Alan returned home, and it was about 2 a.m. So he gets out of his car, and there's this low howling sound coming from the garage. So what does he do? He checks it out.
Yeah, total opposite of my personality.
Yeah.
I would have ran the other door. Wow, fuck the kids. I would have took off.
So when he approaches the garage, a voice called out, come here, from behind the garage.
Oh, nope.
So again, having never watched a horror movie in his life, he walks behind the house to see who said, come here, at 2 a.m. Alan.
That reminds me of Alvin from Alvin and the Chipmunks.
So Alan walks around the back of the house and he sees no one's there. No big deal. Nobody's there. I just heard this voice. So then he goes back to the garage. Let's do this again. Do you want to guess what he saw?
Nothing.
The garage is on fire.
What does he do?
He saw the garage on fire. He runs inside, drops his lunchbox on the floor, as you would, grabs his fire extinguisher.
No, he keeps his lunchbox with him the whole time.
You know, if I'm running to try to put out a fire, I feel like the strap would just be around my arm and I would just be running like an idiot. He grabs a fire extinguisher from inside, and then he runs back out to the garage, where he sees no fire.
Oh, Alan.
Grab your lunchbox, go to bed.
Get your lunch, get your kids, get your wife, get your lunch, and get out.
Hide your kids, hide your wife. Okay, so he looks around the garage, there's no signs of a fire, nothing. So obviously he's sitting here going, I'm insane. I need to go to sleep. He goes back inside, picks up his lunchbox off the floor, where it is then ripped from his hands and thrown across the room.
Oh my gosh.
He Hey, you challenge the spirits.
That's true. Yeah, he said, come at me.
And then, I guess this scared him. Thank God. Yeah. He started sleeping in his daughter's room to protect them. One night, a fog rolled in around him. That's unsettling. And then a voice came out stating, you're dead.
You're dead?
You're dead.
Oh.
He ran out of this room, and then he went to his room where his wife was, and she saw that he was visibly shaken.
Did he take the kids?
Sleeping in his daughter's room to protect them, runs out of the room from a ghost.
Leaves the kids?
Leaves the girls.
He's a monster.
He was scared. He was probably like, no.
He really did say, fuck the kids.
We already know he drops shit and then runs off without anything else. Fuck the lunchbox, fuck the kids.
Kids are no exception.
I mean, he went to his wife at least. At least he didn't run out of the entire house.
Yeah. He didn't go out for a pack of cigarettes and never return.
Yeah. We're making light of the situation, but I would have been scared to death.
Yes. The story needs to be funny or else it's just going to be sad.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Found my spot. A few days later, Alan had to work late, and he asked a skeptical relative to help watch the girls. By the way, Debbie is a stay-at-home mom, so she's also home.
She needs help?
I mean, probably at this point, like, she's probably scared shitless.
Oh, I guess, yeah, she probably is really scared and wants someone else there.
Absolutely, yeah.
The girls ain't gonna help.
See, I don't know, during this whole time, I don't know if Debbie actually saw anything, or if it was just what... Well, no, I guess she witnessed the opening and slamming of doors and the voices, so...
Yeah, so she was scared.
At least that, yeah, that would scare me. My door slams, and I cause it, it still scares me. So the skeptical relative was helping watch the girls that night and also saw something similar to the red-eyed witch, apparently screamed in the house, which alerted Debbie, who then decided to pack up the kids and leave the house forever.
Good choice, Debbie. You should have made that from the beginning, but good choice. See what women get done when men aren't around? Good choice.
2 weeks later, the bunk beds were either destroyed or moved to a landfill.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do it like last time where I said landfill. and then no further hauntings.
No further.
No further hauntings occurred after the beds were removed from the house. In April of 1988, a new family moved into the town. I did what that thing where you put two thes in there. April 1988, a new family moved into the Talman house, and they have had no hauntings. My brain paused.
That was a hard sentence.
It was. They've had no hauntings. So, there is a skeptic, and he has some credential, which I also don't know, but it's in one of my sources. He decided to say that, or he's, words are hard, hang on, let me think of them. He is convinced that the hauntings, the quote hauntings, were just inhalation of toxic gas fumes.
Okay.
And I don't know if he came to this conclusion before or after this next part, but 1 year later, Wisconsin Power and Lighting had to replace faulty gas fittings in homes all across Horicon. However, the Talman House was not one of the houses that needed to be fixed.
So they didn't have any faulty gas lines.
Correct. However, the way that the houses are set up, it's just like a suburb. And so the houses are pretty close together, kind of like what they would be in a normal suburb. Maybe slightly further apart, like double the space. So you can't reach out and touch your neighbor's house.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's like 6 to 12 feet, I think, in between. There's a picture in one of the sources that shows their house, and you can see kind of the houses beside them. So, I don't know how close a home with a faulty gas fitting would have to be to, like, leak toxic fumes to the next place.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. However,
the hauntings didn't start until a year after they moved into the home, which could just mean that the gas fittings weren't faulty until sometime then. The hauntings were from 1987 to 88. There was only 9 months of them. And then after the bunk beds were removed from the house, there were no hauntings.
Yeah, everything was fine.
The family later didn't have any hauntings. So that new family moved in April 1988, and they had moved out January of 1988, so that's only a few months. So I don't know if it was a year after the Talmans moved out or a year after the new family moved in that the fittings were replaced.
Yeah, but either way, the Talmans are the only ones who experienced a, quote, haunting or some biological environmental effect.
Correct.
I believe in haunting, so. Yeah, I think that it was haunted bunk beds.
Yeah. Well, I want to know more about the bunk beds, but I can't find anything. If anybody can find anything, please send it to me, because I want to know. But I'm pretty sure they were destroyed, so.
Oh. I mean, that's good. That's not, oh, that's good.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe we'll hear about a haunted landfill.
Ooh.
If that's where these bunk beds are.
I bet a lot of landfills are haunted, because I feel like some people just throw away haunted items, and then they go.
Or dead bodies.
Yeah, and then they go and they live in the landfill.
Yeah.
Wow.
Have you ever been into a landfill?
I have. So, quick, sad story. I used to be really religious when I was younger, and I went on a missions trip to Nicaragua. But, unfortunately, there was people who lived in a landfill, and we went there and visited them. And it is just heartbreakingly sad, but it's what you expect it is. Managua, Nicaragua, whatever their city's landfill is where we went.
I've been to a landfill with my dad because he has, like, this dumpster business. So he takes these dumpsters to people's houses who are, like, renovating their houses or whatever they're doing.
Mm.
And they'll keep it for a certain amount of time, but he also dumps it for them. So when I went back for Christmas, I helped him work. And we went there. And I gotta tell you, the smell in a landfill is so bad.
Yeah.
It is so bad.
Yeah.
Like, I can't
You can't breathe.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gross. And I mentioned it to my dad, and he was like, I don't even smell it anymore.
Oh, no, sir.
Well, good for you.
No,
this
sir.
Sucks. And he had to get out in it, too, because he had to, like, we had to go. It was creepy, too, because he had informed me while we were at the top of the hill that we were just all sitting on trash. And I was like, I don't feel comfortable with this at all.
No.
Ugh. Like, 60 feet of mountains of trash, like, why do we do this?
Yeah, it's kind of sad whenever you take a look at all the trash that we create as human beings.
Yeah.
Makes you want to change the world. Okay, so, this week I am covering the Dybbuk box. No idea if I'm saying that correctly. I pray to sweet baby Jesus that I am, but that's okay.
I think you are.
So, in early 2004, a seemingly innocent wooden wine box went up for sale on eBay. Inside said box was two locks of hair, one granite slab, one dried rosebud, one goblet, two wheat pennies, one candlestick, and allegedly one Dybbuk. Ominous.
Dybbuk.
Dybbuk.
I still don't know if I understand a Dybbuk, but we'll get to it.
Yeah, we'll get to it. So the seller was a Missouri college student named Losif, and they labeled the container as a haunted Jewish wine cabinet box, which, like, Losif, just choose one descriptor and just fucking stick with it. Is it a wine box? Is it a cabinet? What
Your
is it?
Your title needs to be short and catchy. Your description can tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah. So in the description of the posting, Losif wrote, quote, I very strongly do not want this box anymore. Okay.
I very strongly do not like this.
He's very emotional about it.
What? Did it say what part of Missouri?
No, just Missouri college students. So I would assume Columbia, Missouri, Springfield, because Mizzou and MSU, two biggest ones.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows, man? He probably ain't out in the boonies buying a haunted wine cabinet box. Let's just say that. Okay, I hope there is someone on eBay who will take this off my hands. End quote.
I very strongly do not want this.
Losif then goes on to explain the number of plagues that had befallen them since they purchased the cabinet.
What's the definition of a plague? I'm pretty sure he's using it incorrectly there.
Let's see.
I'm gonna dictionary this.
Waves, outbreaks, epidemics, diseases.
So, like, Not a plan.
Bad voodoo is, I think, how he's trying to explain it. So Losef blamed the box for sleeping problems, car trouble, and light bulbs burning throughout his home. Which, like, that's all normal shit, but okay. But it does get weirder. So, quote, "I've started seeing things, sort of like large vertical dark blurs in my peripheral vision. I smell something like juniper bushes or stingy ammonia in my garage often, and I have no idea what from. Most disturbingly, last Tuesday, my hair began to fall out. Today, Friday, it's about half gone. I'm in my early 20s, and I just got a clean blood test back from the doctors. Maybe it's stress-related, I don't know." End quote.
That's a lot of stress.
Yeah, hell yeah, that is. If your hair's falling out?
Like, that quickly? That's a lot of stress.
Ugh, I couldn't even imagine.
I don't want to imagine. That's creepy.
No, it makes me really sad.
It's like a nightmare.
Alright, so now for a little context. A Dybbuk is a malicious spirit in Jewish mythology that is believed to be the lost soul of a dead person. Instead of moving on to heaven, the soul becomes trapped in an object and will remain there until someone helps release the spirit. The word Dybbuk also comes from an ancient Hebrew word meaning to cling. So the spirit is literally clinging to this wine cabinet box. Losef is not the only person to list this Dybbuk box for sale. For the original tale of this box, we must travel back to September of 2001, which, like, a lot of bad shit happened in September 2001, man.
Bad month last year.
Yeah. Kevin Manis posted the box for sale on eBay with an incredibly detailed story. So the rest of this episode is basically going to be me reading Kevin's experience with the box from eBay. So all of this comes from Kevin. Kevin was an antiques collector and a small business owner when he discovered the box at a neighborhood estate sale. The items for sale were from the home of a woman who had passed away at age 103. That's an old lady. Man, cut me off.
Say, that's an old bitch.
I'm not that predictable, okay? The woman's granddaughter, who is unnamed in Kevin's story in all the sources, begins to tell Kevin the story of her grandmother. According to the granddaughter, her grandmother had been born in Poland, where she grew up, married, and raised a family. She lived there until Poland fell under Nazi rule, where she was then sent to a concentration camp during World War II. The grandmother was the only surviving member of her family. Her parents, brothers, sister, husband, two sons, and a daughter were all murdered by Nazis. So quick disclaimer, fuck Nazis.
Yeah, fuck Nazis.
I feel like that should be a common theme throughout humanity, but apparently it's not.
That actually just should be the title. Fuck Nazis. A paranormal experience.
There we go. We found it. She survived the camp by escaping with other prisoners and made her way to Spain, where she lived until the end of the war. While in Spain, she acquired the small wine cabinet and was only one of three items that she brought with her when she immigrated to the United States. So, she's a pretty bad bitch.
What's the other two items that she brought herself?
I don't know. Kevin and the granddaughter didn't tell me. Dilly dab it, Kevin.
But she is really awesome.
Yeah.
She survived all of that, escaped, has now a Dybbuk box that she brought with her. And
yeah, likely trapped a spirit.
Lived until 103. Like, I don't want to fuck with her. Mm-mm. Don't get on her bad side.
Granny's gonna be mad. So the granddaughter went on to detail that when growing up, the grandmother kept the wine cabinet locked away in her sewing room. She told the granddaughter that the box was to never be opened, and supposedly the grandmother had asked to be buried with the cabinet. However, this request goes against the rules of an Orthodox Jewish burial, so the request was not honored. Which kind of bothers me. I'm like, okay, I understand that you're religious and this is your religion, but literally who gives a fuck how you're buried or what you're buried with, okay?
Yeah, I don't know that. I don't understand that logic, but I'm also not religious, so.
Yeah. So the granddaughter told Kevin that the grandmother apparently kept a Dybbuk locked in the box. When Kevin asked the granddaughter what a Dybbuk was, she responded that she did not know and did not care to know.
She knows.
Yeah, this lady knows. Especially if she's Jewish. Like, it's from Jewish mythology. So you know, homegirl, you know.
I mean, like, if you just see this on eBay or, like, you see it at an estate sale and somebody's like, we have all these random things in this cabinet, but also a Dybbuk. Like, I'm thinking more, like, dreidel-esque.
Yeah.
Like, maybe it's a game. I'm not thinking clinging spirit.
Clinging spirit. So Kevin offered to let the family keep what seemed like a sentimental keepsake. However, the granddaughter was insistent that he take it home with him.
But you don't know what a Dybbuk is.
Yeah, you're just really insistent that this dude take this nice-ass wine box. She kept saying, no, no, you bought it.
No, no.
Kevin tried to explain that he did not want his money back and he didn't care about his money, but it would make him feel better if the family got to keep the item. The woman then became so upset that she was crying, and when Kevin tried to comfort her, she screamed at him to leave the property.
Well, that's rude.
Yeah. Kevin wrote this off as stress and grief and took his purchase and left. All right. Mm-mm. Mistake number four, Kevin. Mistake number one was, first of all, going to an estate sale.
Yeah, I don't know about estate sales.
Yeah. I guess it could be kind of fun to look through people's stuff.
Yeah, but I don't know about, like, buying it and keeping it. It just seems almost sad.
Yeah. Like, donate that shit to a thrift store and then I'll take it, but I don't really... No, I kind of would like to creep through everyone's stuff, so.
I'd probably walk through one, depending.
Yeah.
On where it was, but I don't know if I'd buy anything. Every time I looked at the item, I would just get sad.
Remember that time I went to that dead lady's home? Aw.
Nice home.
Alright, so Kevin took the box back to his furniture repair shop and put it in his workshop, which was located in the basement. He had plans to refinish the cabinet and gift it to his mother. He then opened the store as normal. And one of his employees, who Kevin described as a young woman that he had worked with for 2 years, arrived to work. Kevin told her he had some errands to run and left her alone at the store. Completely normal day. After about half an hour, his phone began to ring. When he answered, he realized it was from his employee and she was frantic. She told Kevin someone was in the workshop in the basement breaking glass and swearing. The intruder had locked all of the iron security gates and the emergency exits, leaving her with no way to leave the store.
Breaking glass and swearing.
He's pissed. Kevin told the employee to call the police, and at that exact moment, his phone died. Like,
his phone died?
Yeah, Kevin's did.
That's interesting.
Yeah, boy, you're not leaving it charged? Steven never charges his phone, so not shocked.
I don't either, so I can't say anything.
Oh my god, my phone is always charged. If I don't answer your call, I'm one, ignoring you, or dead.
What the fuck? Unlike me, where I just accidentally turn mine on vibrate, and then I walk out of the room without it, and then 2 hours later, I have, like, a bunch of texts and missed calls.
Yeah, when I'm in the middle of a panic over here, you're just not answering your phone.
I felt really bad. I looked at my phone, because it had also gone into Do Not Disturb, because at a certain time. Like an hour before I should go to bed, it goes into Do Not Disturb. Uh-huh. So it doesn't even tell me. So I just happened to pick up my phone and it was 14 messages and 2 missed calls. And I went, no, what happened?
No, what happened?
And it was from hours ago and I was just over here just fucking chilling.
Watching your Korean dramas.
Or I was stressing out over here about something I should care about and I just not even aware.
Not even in the world.
Yeah.
So Kevin raced back to his store, hitting speeds of over 100 miles an hour. That's according to Kevin. He might just be dramatizing that, but who knows?
That's real fast.
That's very fast. What kind of car are you driving, Kevin? How's it going that fast? When he finally reached the shop, he found the gates were locked, so the employee was telling the truth. And when he made his way inside, he found his employee on the floor in a corner of his office, sobbing hysterically. Kevin then sprinted down to the basement to catch the intruder, but once he was at the bottom of the stairs, he was hit by the overpowering odor of cat urine. I typed car urine, so obviously a typo. Within the post, Kevin made sure to tell us that he never allowed or had found cats to be in his shop, so he does not know how the smell got here.
I do. Dybbuk.
Dybbuk box, Kevin.
Dybbuk. Because you opened it, you Dybbuk.
When Kevin tried to turn on the lights to get a better look, none of the lights worked. As he stepped inside, he heard glass breaking and realized that all of the light bulbs had been busted in their sockets. Unsurprising to us, Kevin did not find an intruder in the basement. He then went back upstairs to comfort his employee, but when he walked into the office, she was gone. The employee never returned to work and refused to discuss the incident with anyone. Like, that's interesting.
I would want to talk to that employee.
Yeah. So after about 2 weeks after the incident, Kevin brushed this off as nothing and began to refinish the cabinet for his mother.
Kevin, what are you doing?
When he was working on it, Kevin discovered all of the items listed above, and he decided to save the items, intending to return them to the family.
No.
When he took them to the family, they refused to accept any of the items.
There is a reason they are in the box.
Yeah. I'm not sure. So he goes on to give this to everyone. So I'm not sure if he puts them it back in the box and gifts all the items to his family members, or if he just kept the items, because he doesn't specify in his post. Yeah.
But I just think if he took them out to give them back, the family didn't take them, maybe he left them out of the box.
Yeah. And Losif, our guy at the beginning, has the items. So Kevin obviously put them back in the box whenever he sold it. But I'm not sure what he did with it while he was passing it around to his family. So Kevin cleans up the cabinet, finishes it for his mother. On his mother's birthday, October 28th, she was out of town with Kevin's sister, and they had to postpone celebrating her birthday. When she returned, on October 31st, 2001, also known as Halloween, also known as best day of the year.
Agreed.
His mother stopped by the shop. They ate lunch together and had an all-around enjoyable day. Kevin surprised his mother with the cabinet, and she seemed to enjoy it.
Surprise! He has a Dybbuk.
He has a Dybbuk, Mama. Kevin had to step out to make a phone call, so his mother was left alone with the cabinet. No more than 5 minutes had passed when an employee came sprinting up to Kevin, telling him that something was wrong with his mother. Kevin went running back inside and found his mother sitting in a chair next to the cabinet. She had no expression, but tears were streaming down her face. Kevin began to shake and yell at his mother, but she still could not respond.
If something's going on medically, you probably don't want to shake her.
Yeah.
But also, this is incident number two in your shop, Kevin.
Just counting for everybody, number two.
Just keep a tally.
Kevin called an ambulance and his mother was taken to the hospital. Later, Kevin learned that she had suffered a stroke and had lost her ability to speak. She still understood when people were talking to her, so she could use the alphabet to spell out her responses to people's questions. When Kevin visited her the next day and asked her how she was doing, she began to tear up and spelled out the word, no gift. Thinking she had forgotten about the cabinet due to the... Thinking she had forgotten about the cabinet due to the stroke, Kevin assured her he had given her a gift. But she became more upset and spelled out the words, hate gift.
Okay, first of all, your mother does not care if you give her a gift.
Yeah.
She doesn't. She's not going to cry and say you didn't get her a gift.
Yeah, it's any normal mother.
Yes. Well, I feel bad for Kevin's mother. He obviously hates her.
He's an idiot.
Yeah.
Kevin, clearly not thinking straight at this point, laughed and told her he was sorry that she didn't like the gift and would give her anything she wanted as soon as she got better. Oh, and also Kevin did tell us in the post that his mother fully recovered and she was completely fine. Now.
Good. She should have slapped him afterwards. Kevin, don't ever give me a gift.
No more Dybbuks. So Kevin wrote off the stroke as a freak accident and did not associate anything as being caused by the cabinet or something paranormal.
I don't know why I like that so much.
No more Dybbuks.
It just sounds like an old lady. I can just see an old lady with a wooden spoon just like shaking it.
Just slapping him over the back of the head.
Cooking dinner.
So not wanting to just throw away this perfectly good cabinet, Kevin tried to give it to his sister.
Idiot.
She kept it for 1 week, but complained that she couldn't get the doors to stay closed, so she returned it to him. He then took it and gifted it to his brother and sister-in-law.
Idiot.
His brother told Kevin it smelled like jasmine flowers, but Kevin's sister-in-law insisted that the cabinet smelled like cat piss and demanded that Kevin take it back.
Smart, because that dude was going to get possessed.
Mm-hmm. Good job, girl.
Saved your husband.
Next, Kevin tries to give it to his girlfriend, who he clearly does not love.
No, absolutely not. He actually just wanted to break up with her, and he thought the box would do it for him.
After 2 days, his girlfriend decided that she didn't like it and asked Kevin to sell it in the store. They sold it to a, quote, nice middle-aged couple, but 3 days later, Kevin arrived at work to find the cabinet sitting outside with a note that read, "This has bad darkness."
Hey, Kev. How many people don't like your box?
Take a hint, man.
What's he do next?
He decided to keep it for himself.
Idiot.
No one else wanted it, so he thought that he would bring it home.
Nobody wants this box. Your mother told you she hated it. Everybody else says it smells like cat piss. The last people you tried to give it to told you that it has darkness.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, you have an employee who just ran off and, like, who knows what she did, because we don't know where she is.
Yeah, we have no idea what she did.
So just take it home, Kev.
I'll keep it.
This is mine.
This is mine. These are not the droids you are looking for. So that night, Kevin brought the cabinet home, and he began to have a strange, reoccurring nightmare. The dream goes something like this. Quote, "I find myself walking with a friend, usually someone I know well, and trust at some point in this dream. I find myself looking into the eyes of the person that I am with, and it is then that I realize that there is something different, something evil looking back at me. At this point in my dream, the person I am with changes into what can only be described as the most gruesome, demonic-looking hag I have ever seen. This hag proceeds then to beat the living tar out of me, and I have awakened numerous times to find bruises and marks on myself where I had been hit by the old woman during the previous night. Still, I never related the nightmares to the cabinet, nor do I think I ever would," end quote.
Because you're not smart, Kev. You're not smart.
He's not putting it together, you know?
There's multiple things there. So first of all, the hag is really just the lady from Poland who was like, "Hey, bitch, bury this.
Get rid of this."
Second, that actually sounds similar to sleep paralysis, just minus the bruising, because you don't really wake up with bruises.
Oh, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
It does, yeah.
Because some people have had sleep paralysis. Your dog is ridiculous. Look at it, he was just staring at the door like, "Are you going to open?"
Yeah, it's probably what he's thinking.
But some people have had dreams where they get the crap beat out of them. Or someone is trying to kill them or, like, choke them or something like that, so.
And isn't a hag a reoccurring theme within sleep paralysis? It's probably like a little old lady?
Yeah, it's probably one of the most common ones. Because there's a bunch of folklore, too, that talks about a hag that sits on your chest and presses down on it. And it's, like, Turkish folklore. And it's all over the place. So yeah. It's not, like, it's just, like, this one region. It's everywhere.
Hmm. So a couple weeks after the nightmare started, Kevin's sister, brother, and sister-in-law all came over for a little sleepover. The next morning at breakfast, Kevin's sister begins to complain that she had been having a horrible nightmare and had it again last night. She went on to explain the exact same nightmare that Kevin had been having.
This was a sister-in-law?
That was his sister.
Okay, okay.
Who had the box for 3 days, couldn't keep the doors closed and return.
So clearly only the girls in this family are the smart ones. The mom, the sister-in-law. Saved her husband from getting possessed, actually put the pieces together, and the mom said, "Don't fucking use this."
And Kevin brings it home. Kevin's brother and sister-in-law sat at the table frozen, and eventually they confessed that they too had the same exact nightmare last night and had experienced it previously. As they talked, they all realized that the common denominator was the cabinet. Whenever they each experienced the nightmare, they realized it was only when the cabinet was in their homes. Kevin immediately called his girlfriend and asked her if she had had any nightmares recently. She said something along the lines of, "Yes, how did you know, Kevin?"
Wow, you're so smart.
Clearly he's not very smart.
Yeah, right?
So following the family discussion, Kevin said that all hell started to break loose. The week afterward, Kevin started to see what he described as shadows within his peripheral vision. He had numerous visitors over at his house who claimed to see the shadows as well.
I thought about Loseph where he was like, "I very strongly do not like this.
I very strongly do not want this
box." I see shadows. I just picture you're a cute little nerd. I very strongly do not want this.
Yeah, like 70 pounds with huge glasses.
And suspenders.
So Kevin put the cabinet in an outside storage unit, but was awakened when the smoke alarm started to go off in the middle of the night. When he went out to investigate, he realized that there was no fire or smoke, but there was the smell of cat urine. He then went back inside where he smelled cat piss again in his house. Kevin decided to do some research, and this man went out and brought the cabinet inside his house.
No. What are you doing?
No.
Kev.
You're...
What are you doing, Kevin?
Kev. While surfing the net, which clearly I copy and pasted that line because I would never say surfing the net.
While surfing the net.
He began to fall asleep, and he had the same nightmare with the old hag. He woke up around 4:30 a.m. and felt someone breathing down his neck.
Uh-huh.
He turned quickly to see a huge shadow sprinting down the hall away from him. Kevin's eBay post ends with the following paragraph. Quote, "I would destroy this thing in a second, except I really don't have an understanding of what I may or may not be dealing with. I am afraid, and I do mean afraid, that if I destroy the cabinet, whatever it is that seems to have come with the cabinet may just stay here with me. I have been told that there are people who shop on eBay that understand these kinds of things and specifically look for these kinds of items. If you're one of these people, please, please buy this cabinet and do whatever you do with a thing like this. Help me." End quote.
That is the only smart thing that he's done.
This entire story.
Yeah. But also you said the hag sprinted down the hallway?
No, so he had the dream of the hag, and then he woke up and a dark shadow was breathing on his neck. And when he turned, the shadow sprinted down.
Away from him.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's, I don't know, I heard sprinted down the hallway and I was like, not another one, because it took me back to the sleep paralysis story where it sprints down the fucking hallway at the guy. No.
So Kevin posted this cabinet for sale on eBay, where it then fell into the hands of Losip. Which, Losip, you don't be sounding like you're one of those people that search for these items and helps people with this.
I very strongly do not want this box. But you bought it.
Yeah, you got quickly scared by my man.
From the beginning, what happened, and you bought it. Why? What are you doing?
Being a college student is what it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. It's actually hazing. He tried to get into a fraternity, and he had to buy the box. And he was like, I don't want to be in this fraternity.
So Losif, after all of his alleged experiences from the beginning of the story, decided to sell the cabinet. The cabinet was then found by The cabinet was then found by a man named Joseph Haxton. Haxton was a university museum curator and claims that he has been contacted by authors, directors, documentary crews, rabbis, and Hebrew intellectuals who all hope to crack the box's mysteries.
Or burn it.
Yeah. Haxton says he's had to unlist his home number, change his email address, and create an entire website just to field inquiries.
That's Joseph. A lot of people contacting him.
Yeah. Which, you know, I'd be up for a documentary.
Yeah.
I'd do it. Joseph has been aided in researching the box by a woman named Rebecca Edery, who is an Orthodox Jewish bookkeeper. It was Rebecca who helped uncover the purpose of the box. She said, quote, "The two doors on the outside open up just like the holy chest, and I saw round metal hoops on the inside of the doors that would hold scrolls. This particular size is when someone is going to comfort the family of the deceased." End quote. Rebecca says she is convinced the box was sacred and had been intentionally stuffed with some sort of spirit. She believes that to put an end to the misfortune, the box needs to have a formal Jewish burial involving a 10-man minyan, I hope I said that right, or a prayer group.
You mean like the original Polish lady wanted?
Yeah.
Wow.
What grandma would have solved? Grandma would have solved all of this.
Yeah. So she took it with her from Spain to America so that she could have it buried appropriately and no one would ever have to know. But now.
But her granddaughter said, nah, fuck you, granny.
I'm going to give this to Losif. Kevin?
Kevin. Kevin and then Losif.
Yeah.
For his part, Joseph Haxton says he wants to follow the box back to its origins. Then he says he might create a replica and bury the original. Quote, to me, this is a historical puzzle. It came from somewhere. It was made for a reason. What is it and why is it? End quote. And that is the story of the Dybbuk box.
So does Zach Bagans have the original?
So, yes. So, Zach Bagans does have the original, and this box has been in the media recently because apparently Post Malone is haunted because he touched the box or something like that. I don't care. I don't care about Zach Bagans, and I don't care about Post Malone, but apparently those are the people who now own this cabinet.
Yeah, I know Zach Bagans has it in his museum.
Yeah. Where I think that he live streams. Mm-hmm. His museum, so you can see all the creepy things in there.
Mm-hmm. I think he's even claimed that he has conquered the box. It, quote, doesn't affect him as much because it knows he's the owner.
He's something else.
On this one, I feel like maybe, I don't know, Zach, should you bury it?
Yeah, Zach, bury it and let it go to its home, but now he needs to make money.
Because even if that's true and there is a spirit that just needs to be buried because it is a lost soul, you're just keeping it in a museum.
Yeah, let it go peacefully.
Cruel and unusual punishment, but what do I know?
Amen, sister. But that is our episode for paranormal things.
We hope you liked it.
Yeah, I hope so too. But one order of business before we go, we have now created Instagram and Twitter. Mm-hmm. So if anyone wants to contact us on Instagram, please feel free to do so at Perfect Dismay Podcast. Or you can email us at perfectdismaypodcast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to send anything through Twitter, it's at PDMKpodcast. So we can put the links in the description like we do the sources if anybody wants to go on there. Also, yeah. If anyone has any critiques or encouragement or topics you want, or you just want to send some kind of voice message, you can go to anchor.fm/Mariah-K, and there's an option to add a message, and you can just start your recording. Then it'll come to us, and then we can feature it if you want.
Yeah, I hope that someone reaches out to us and gives us feedback.
Absolutely.
And if you could please rate and review this on Apple Podcasts, it would be so blessed, and it helps us with the algorithm. We get put on charts. Yes, thank you, Kayla. We get put on charts more, so it'll help reach to all your friends. And we hope to see you next week. Love you. Bye.
Bye.